Hi, I'm Dana Perkins, and you're listening to Switched On, the BNEF podcast. In today's episode, my colleague Ethan Zindler, who is BNEF's Head of Americas, interviews Secretary Jennifer Granholm, United States Secretary of Energy. She is the 16th Secretary of Energy and was sworn in on the 25th of February, just a couple of months ago. One of Secretary Granholm's goals while at the DOE includes helping the United States achieve President Biden's goal of net zero carbon emissions by 2050. She plans to do this through advancing cutting-edge clean energy technologies and creating millions of clean energy jobs. Definitely something we want to hear more about at BNEF. This interview is from the 13th of April and took place during BNEF's New York Summit, which is focused on where energy, finance, and technology converge. The New York Summit is one of six BNEF summits taking place around the world. And for more detail on this and other summits, head to about.bnef.com/summit. As a quick reminder, BNEF does not provide investment or strategy advice, and you can hear our complete disclaimer at the end of the show. But for now, let's hear Ethan's interview with Secretary Granholm.
Secretary Granholm, thanks so much for joining us today. It's great to have you here at the Bloomberg NEF Summit. We've now had your four predecessors in your current job, and so it's wonderful to have you as the fifth come here today and speak with us.
It's an attend event for sure for any energy secretary.
Thanks very much. I think just to get us started, I'd like to give you an open-ended one. Maybe tell us a little bit about what you see as the administration's priorities as far as energy and clean energy and sustainability over the next 2, 4, and potentially 8 years.
Well, as you can imagine, not really a surprise. The administration is obviously very focused on making sure that we have clean energy future. So those goals that y'all have talked about, I'm sure, and that everybody's heard about, the 100% clean electricity by 2035 and net zero carbon emissions by 2050, has everybody pointing in the same direction. And that includes departments that aren't even necessarily related to clean energy at all. But everybody has to do their part, whether it's the federal government leading by example by creating a market for clean energy products for its use itself and installing them, like through the Department of Defense, or whether it's the Department of State using clean energy diplomacy as a way of being able to partner with countries. It's certainly true with the Department of Transportation, as we've seen with the effort to electrify the nation's highways. It's certainly true with the efforts through the Department of Commerce to build up an entire clean energy sector and manufacture the products for our future in that sector here in America. So the bottom line is every single department has something to offer. This administration is focused on clean energy means jobs, and we want to create good paying jobs in every corner of the country and have those jobs really be a means to lift up communities that have been left behind or that have been the victims of power plant pollution, where their children might not even be able to take a breath without an inhaler. So it's really about equity and jobs and deployment of clean energy.
So I figured you were going to say something about jobs, which is a useful segue into the American Jobs Plan, which, of course, was announced with a good deal of fanfare, I think 3 weeks ago now, 2 weeks ago. The $2.3 trillion is the number that's been reported in terms of the dollar. The AJP seems like it's more of a manifesto than an actual piece of legislation. It's sort of a statement of request and intent to Congress, if I understand that right. And I have some questions about it, but maybe one kind of specific one, I know it's kind of in the weeds, but it's very important to our audience, is it talks about a 10-year extension of key tax credits for renewables and for energy storage. Currently, storage can only get a tax credit if it's attached to renewables. Is it the administration's position that you're supportive of standalone storage also getting a tax credit, or is it going to have to continue to be lumped together with a solar project, let's say?
No, I mean, I think the administration is supportive of tax credits for battery technology, whether it's attached or whether it's obviously utility scale, you name it, we want to see battery technology develop and deploy. And, you know, at the DOE, we're focused on you know, continuing to bring down the price of batteries and finding substitutes for lithium, for example. We're also really interested in developing the full-on supply chain. You see that in the American Jobs Plan as well, to be able to mine responsibly, of course, for critical materials that we know we've got beneath the surface of so many pockets of this country, whether it's lithium or cobalt. You know, I mean, the bottom line is we can do that and we can do it responsibly. We can even process responsibly, but we've got to get the ball rolling to create that supply chain. I mean, you know, you're speaking to me on a week where the administration is convening people from the automotive industry because we have lost the ability to produce in this country semiconductors. Well, you know, if we can't produce the means to our energy independence through batteries or the ability to build EVs because we don't have enough semiconductors, then we've really lost as a nation out on our own independence, our economic independence. So, you know, some stuff is not going to be built here, but I'm telling you, these critical components, these critical supplies that we know we need for our own energy, we have to look at that as a, you know, as a real moment for America. If we decide we want to have the means to our own energy independence, we've got to build that stuff here. And that may mean that we've got to invest a bit to make that happen. So the bottom line is, I think, whether it's tax credits, whether it's refundable tax credits that can be monetized up front or over the period of time, but that's still all subject to negotiation, clearly, in Congress. The American Jobs Plan has laid out a framework of what things should look like, but hopefully we have robust support for battery storage, for energy storage.
Well, first, thanks for that clarification. I realize we dove right into the weeds, but I think that's an important one to a lot of folks who attend our conference, for sure. To zoom out a little bit more on that, though, the jobs plan also really gives a very quick mention to some kind of a national energy efficiency and clean energy standard. And of course, as you mentioned, the president's ran on the promise of decarbonizing the U.S. power sector entirely by 2035. And we're still, at the moment, 60% coal and gas production in the U.S. Fully with the understanding that Congress is going to hash this out, you know, how do you see DOE interfacing and being involved in a clean energy standard? Because I did notice that there's also some money allocated in the proposed budget for DOE to help oversee a potential clean energy standard. How do you envision something like that coming together?
Well, you know, so much of it depends on how it is crafted, right? You know, the question about whether you can get a clean energy standard through regular order or reconciliation, all of that still remains to be seen, right? But there's also a way to consider crafting something that provides incentives to the states to be able to make that happen also. So that might be another venue, in the same way that we did, you know, race to the top to create high school standards in education. You know, some carrots sometimes make states go a long way. And then there's the other sort of big goal out there, which is the net zero carbon emission by 2050. And maybe some states would prefer something like that. I mean, the bottom line is that's still subject to negotiation. And I know it's important to a lot of members of Congress, but if we don't create demand, we have to create demand and supply. You can't put the cart of supply before the horse of demand. You've got to go down both paths. And the clean energy standard is one way to do that. Obviously, that's true with building standards. It's true with the federal government creating demand by purchasing itself for its own usage. So we have to create both supply and demand, and CES and energy efficiency as well is a way to do that.
That's a really intriguing. So I know this is all, we're all into the realm of the hypothetical here, but it sounds like one potential idea is to give states the opportunity to try and craft something that would work towards something that would then add up to a national clean energy standard, if I hear you correctly.
Yeah, I've heard people talk about that. I mean, I think there still are versions of a clean energy standard that work for Senate reconciliation rules. So, you know, I think that's an opportunity. And, you know, you can see how committed this administration is to doing clean energy standard, even through the DOE FY22 budget that it put out, the skinny budget. So, you know, bottom line is no decisions have really been made on exactly how it's going to be working, but I think that they are open to figuring out ways that make it work for the pockets of this country that might have concerns about a CES and for the pockets of this country that have already really led by example and can still bump it up a notch.
So I'll pause to just to give a slight Washington translation to our non-Washington people about what reconciliation means. Where the secretary is talking about reconciliation, that is process by which you can pass something essentially with 50 plus one vote. And regular order, as it's known, requires 60 votes. And one of the open questions I think that's out there, to paraphrase you, and apologies if I'm getting it wrong, but is that there's some question as to whether or not a clean energy standard technically could be considered under reconciliation and thus could pass with 50 plus one. It may need 60. And I think that's an open question at this point. But anyway, for those who are not inside baseball followers, I did want to at least clarify what those terms actually meant before we moved on.
Now for a very short break. Stay with us.
Let's talk a little bit more, if we could, about jobs. And, you know, one of the things the jobs plan talks, makes a number of mentions of unionized labor. And obviously, you're, as a former governor of Michigan, you're very familiar with the importance of unionized labor. There's actually relatively little unionized labor in most clean energy manufacturing today. And I guess my question for you is, are you at all concerned that if you put certain labor provisions in place, that you might actually raise some of the cost of manufacturing of some of these key goods, and that might slow their deployment?
Well, here's what I would say is, you know, I think that we have for a very long time bowed to the altar of cost only in manufacturing in general. And we have to decide, I think, what we want to do. Obviously, you want power to be inexpensive and you want it to be reliable and all of that. But, you know, we created this Office of Energy Jobs inside of DOE to help us ensure that all of the announcements that we are coming out with, and we've actually announced over $500 million in funding announcements and grants since the start, since inauguration day, DOE has. And we are dead, I mean, and the Biden administration too is dead set on passing the American Jobs Plan. And when we make those kinds of investments in infrastructure, you know, we obviously employ the private contractors to do the actual work, and it gives us the opportunity to be targeted in who we want to work with and the ability to require prevailing wages and better rights for workers in those contracts. And as you've seen in the American Jobs Plan, the president is committed to connecting clean energy incentives to labor standards, as you've mentioned, and to make sure that the energy sector does a better job of this. And there are a lot of tools to do this that have been used in this energy sector in the more traditional power plant side, like project labor agreements that employers can use if we pursue a goal of a clean energy workforce that looks like America and includes access for all Americans. So we want to use those strategies when we pass the American Jobs Plan and put it into action. You know, the federal government, for example, uses 50 gigawatts of power every year. And if we want to buy power, we want to make sure that that power has been generated through wages that are prevailing wages, that are decent wages for people. I think we all want to see this sector not be considered a sector that is not desirable for people to move into. I know, obviously, the folks who are in the sector know that and believe that, hopefully as well. But especially when you consider transitioning communities that were fossil communities, and now see coal plants having retired and power plants shutting down, and a lot of those workers in those communities may have been members of the coal miners or the electrical workers, et cetera. And you know, they are used to having decent wages. And so it's, you know, the notion of somebody having a decent wage and then all of a sudden have to switch it over to, or we're offering, hey, you can transition over to this particular sector, but you'll be making about half of what you were making before. you know, that's a hard thing to do too. So there's a balance in there. And I think that we can achieve that as a nation. And we think that clean energy can be good paying for the people who are working in it. And we want to make sure that it's good paying and that the rates are affordable. And the United States government is willing to put a lot of money into upfront reducing some of the capital costs so that we can make it affordable.
Totally switching gears for just one second. You mentioned earlier about a long-term goal of CO2 reduction, and there's been some reporting about a potential new U.S. target. I won't ask you to comment on it, but just a question more broadly, which is on the international discussions, as we try to internationally get other countries to cut their emissions and make new promises going into the COP26 negotiations at the end of the year. Other countries, don't you think they have a right to say, hey, U.S., you know, you guys talk a good game, but you know, the last 4 years you've done absolutely nothing. So how can we believe any promise you're going to make unless you actually legislate something at all?
Oh, for sure. It's a great question. Absolutely. I mean, what we can't get on our moral high ground when we have not been able to do what we're asking others to do. So yeah, this is another reason why it's so important to pass the American Jobs Plan, is to make sure that in fact we can legitimately go to Glasgow and say, look what we have done. Look at the cards we have put on the table. Look at the commitments that we have made. Look at how much we are willing to do this. And by the way, it has the benefit of being able to create jobs in America. So I certainly don't want to discount that, because I, as Energy Secretary, see this as a whole huge jobs play for us. But for the purpose of stating goals that allow us to call others to state higher goals too? Absolutely. You are 100% right. I've been meeting with my counterparts in other countries. I just met with my counterpart in South Korea this morning, and we have a big, you know, effort that's being led by John Kerry as part of the Global Climate Leaders Summit. We want people to be announcing their interim goals and to be finalizing them by the time they get to Glasgow. But you bet we've got to, you know, we've got to do what we need to do as a country as well in order to be able to have any credibility on the national stage.
Thanks for that. And I think we have time for basically one more question. And this is more, maybe a little more personal, which is, you know, I'm struck by the, as I said, we've had the last four energy secretaries come to our conference, and I'm struck by the very heterogeneous nature of the people who've held this job in the past. There's been at one point an industry executive, a Nobel Prize winner, the governor of the largest oil producing state, and a former governor of the largest oil producing state. Tom, you know, you come from a state that's a major industrial player in terms of manufacturing and energy usage. Maybe tell me a little bit about, you know, what you think that it is that you bring to this job that's different and unique in terms of perspective and leadership than some of those folks that have the job in the past.
You know, I think the reason why Joe Biden asked me to be energy secretary is because I was the governor of a state that predominantly made a product that was attached to fossil fuels, the internal combustion engine. I was governor of the auto industry. And in that, I was governor during the time when the auto industry went bankrupt, when the suppliers to the auto industry went bankrupt. I have looked into the eyes of people who, through no fault of their own, had the rug pulled out from under them. And I get how hard it is when it's in people's DNA to transition to something new. But we said, look, we have built this internal combustion engine. There were a lot of international imports coming in, threatening the auto industry. We needed to diversify to build car 2.0, which is the electric vehicle, and the guts to that vehicle, which, of course, is the battery. I said, and this was, you know, we were a little ahead of our time. This was obviously in 2009, 2010, but we did do that. And now GM has, you know, said it's going to electrify its entire fleet. And the point being is that I understand how critical it is for states, especially fossil fuel states, to diversify into areas that will give their people a future, so their young people don't move away. Emphasis beside the auto industry was to diversify into clean energy and to create the opportunity for us to manufacture things like wind turbines and solar panels. And of course, I've also seen how the results of a country that has said, we're just going to chase the lowest cost, and what that does for jobs and the manufacturing sector, meaning that our manufacturing sector is now at a 72-year low. We've dropped for 72 years. And it's just, you know, we can decide that that's fine. And then we will let other countries, you know, eat us for lunch. And I think I was asked to do this. And this is why what I bring to this is a total understanding about the job opportunities in this clean energy sector, that it is a $23 trillion global market in the next 10 years. And that the U.S. can say to China and others, you can have it, or we can get in the game to be able to create jobs for our country, for our people. And so I am bullish on making us do that. And I just want to close, because I know we're out of time, but let me just close with a pitch. We, the entire federal government, but especially the Department of Energy, we want to work with you. If you have a project, if you have a product that you want to take to scale, we want to partner with you and encourage you to locate that product in communities that have been left behind. If we can help to make it worth your while, we want you to call us. We want to generate economic opportunity and hope in places where we have a great workforce and people who are decent people, but who haven't been given a chance. And so call us, because we will help to make a deal with you.
Thanks for that. So phone lines are open, folks. You heard that loud and clear. Secretary Granholm, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate getting your perspective. And we're going to get the early invite in to get you to come back again next year. Thanks so much.
All right. I love it. Thanks so much.
Today's episode of Switched On was edited by Rex Warner of Greystoke Media. Bloomberg NEF is a service provided by Bloomberg Finance LP and its affiliates. This recording does not constitute, nor should it be construed as, investment advice, investment recommendations, or a recommendation as to an investment or other strategy. Bloomberg NEF should not be considered as information sufficient upon which to base an investment decision. Neither Bloomberg Finance LP nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this recording, and any liability as a result of this recording is expressly disclaimed.